you fear the zombie uprising? Are you prepared to survive what's coming? If you listen very carefully, you might just make it out alive. This is Zompocalypse Now.
I like when something that you know is, like, when you know logically would be a good thing to happen in the story actually happens.
Yeah. Are you sure?
Because I would have...
We predicted many episodes ago comes to pass because it was kind of obvious.
Yes. But you know that the Walking Dead shows are rife with... Oh, isn't this an obvious thing to be happening? Nope, not that.
True.
Wouldn't this make the most logical sense to be happening? No, we're not going to do that.
One should ride the flow of a story. One should try. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy how it seems to me like that's kind of what happened tonight.
Well, we are discussing the fifth episode of The Walking Dead, Dead City. This is episode 5 of 6. We are one episode away from the end of this first season. This is called Stories We Tell Ourselves, and this is the Zompocalypse Now podcast. I am Timothy Harvey.
And I'm Dustin.
And I'm Curtis.
Yeah, some things happened.
Things indeedy do did happen.
Lots and lots of monologues.
So, a million years ago, in the early days of the show, especially season 2, Dustin and I started timing the monologues. And we came to the conclusion that on average, the monologues were 2 minutes long. And 2 minutes is a long time.
It really is.
It absolutely is.
And it is, you know, this is, you'd have characters talk about their feelings, about things and stuff. And Glenn and Maggie had a lot of these in season 2. And yeah. I think Rick had 4 or 12, something like that. Anyway, for a while, I'm not going to say they went away because they didn't, but it wasn't like, you know, we will pause now for the emoting. And
yes, but now we will stand here while a character espouses his life philosophy.
Right.
For the next 25 minutes.
I think I have an allegory that would be perfect for this occasion.
Oh, do it, Curtis. I love a good allegory.
No, I'm just saying that's what they're, that's oh. what
well,
they're,
well, we've got an allegory do. To talk about later, but no, I'm talking about when Pearly, the marshal in the bus, basically sits there and just starts talking.
Fucking Pearly.
And I'm going to tell the story. And Negan's just sitting there going, I'm contractually obligated to sit in this seat and listen. It's what the script says. So,
right.
My brother was smoking the cheese.
But you know, that's a little bit down the line, so we gotta cover some ground before we get to the monologue on the bus. But yeah,
right. So where do we want to start tonight? I think, unfortunately, we have to start with the Croat. Simply because his little part is so tiny.
Yeah.
And it is. But at the same time, maybe we should wait till last for that, because I feel like that is set up for season 2 is what that is.
We could do that. We could talk about him at the end, because chronologically it happens at the end of the episode anyway.
Right.
But it's also a reveal that the power structure in this city is perhaps not quite as clear cut as we thought it was, or I was portrayed to being.
Well, a lot of things are not as clear cut as we thought they were.
Well, okay, let's start with Negan, because he actually has the shorter of our three stories tonight. His is actually the less things actually happen, really.
And we can get rid of Pokey real fast this way, too.
Yeah.
Pokey and Negan are reenacting one of those old movies from the 40s where two people that don't like each other but are captives of a person they like even less are tied together and then have to escape and then go and on a madcap adventure to escape while being stuck together, only to learn a little about each other and become, if not friends, then at least understandable and respectful of each other along the way. And that's just what they're doing. It's
a stupid chorus of Ebony and Ivory.
I'd say that right. Stuff carries up into the early 80s, but it doesn't quite start that way though, because with it basically, you know, Negan's like, did I not just save you? And
it's like, that had nothing to do with me.
Yeah, thanks for saving me. But it does not matter because it doesn't, you were not like trying to save me. You were just trying to, you know, not do what your friend wanted.
And Negan's like, okay, let me see if I can explain this for the slow kids in class. Really bad people did a bad thing to my wife. I did not care for that. And if you would have seen her, you would
are
have
they talking the about are they talking about the woman they refrigerated?
She got put on the bus.
Well, no, they put her on a bus.
Well, the wagon train, but yeah, she got put on the bus. Yeah. Is the term for that.
So his first wife.
No. Okay, so if you fridge someone, that means you kill the female character to give the male character a reason to do whatever, right? Their death is a cheap way to make give our hero a motivation to be the hero.
All really, right.
That's what it comes down to. Being put
you
on the
killed
bus.
My girlfriend. Now I'm going to destroy your life. One of the most famous.
Who the fuck was she? I can't figure out which wife there.
Go ahead, Dustin.
What had happened with Negan's first wife was sick with cancer when the zombie apocalypse started, and her name was Lucille, and she is the one that he tried to save but couldn't. At the beginning of the zombie apocalypse, and it made him want to form the Saviors. And Lucille was quite,
this is not quite fridging her, though, because right. We don't even learn anything about this until well after we've been introduced to Negan.
Right. Fridging this is actually a good and effective storytelling technique, because right. We don't know anything about the wife until many, many years later. A fridged character has been around all the time. She's the girlfriend. The reason it is because Kyle Rayner in the Green Lantern run that he was the star of had a really obnoxious girlfriend who the villain murdered and left in Kyle Rayner's fridge.
And then the writer Gail Simone, before she became a famous comic book writer,
right,
wrote an article where she coined the term fridging. And this actually brought her to the attention of writers at DC and went, hey, we should talk.
Right.
So being put on a bus, though, is when you don't want to kill off a character, but you don't really want to show any
keep
kind
them
of,
around. Yeah.
You don't want to keep them around. You don't want to kill them off. But you also don't want to bring that actor back for the 5-second departure shot. So you basically have someone say, and then they left. The original version of that, they got on a bus and drove and, you know, rode away.
Yeah.
So that's being put on the bus. So then they're away and they're gone. So she got put on the bus. She and the baby got put on a bus to a wagon train to Missouri. But She is the motivation for Negan's murder spree. Well, I guess it was even a murder spree.
He killed like 6 guys. Come on. Well, that's a slow week for Negan.
Okay, so he killed 6 guys because somebody beat up his wife.
Well, it's implied very strongly that she was raped as well.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So
Jesus, I had to sit through a whole class to get to that.
And you're welcome.
My fucking guys.
You're welcome.
Well, and then they point the camera at the actor, and then they say words into the camera.
Curtis, what show have you been being a part of for the last 2 years, Curtis? Come on. You know that if you give Tim or I the merest opportunity to top some weird pop culture film reference, we are going to do it.
You're right.
Stop pretending you don't know where you are.
This is, in fact, your own fault, Curtis.
I know, but you guys invited me to this party. And so there's me you have to contend with.
Right.
And then they put a microphone nearby so it can be recorded into a device. Fucking guys. What were we talking about? Oh, okay. Yeah, Negan beat up he killed those guys, and what's his Pearly wants to take him to jail for it still because he's persistent apparently.
And Negan's right. Like, but no, I think not. And Pearly is like, well, yes, we are. And Negan's like, fine, I'll play along with you, gimp.
And Pokey like says we need to get to the pier. And Negan's like, there ain't no boats at the pier. I don't know what you expect to happen there. And he's like, no, there are parts of the pier that are removable. And all we have to do is float from where we are to there. And it'll be great. And that's when Negan is like, wait a minute. Are you local? And Pokey is like, all hemming and hawing. And Negan's like, all right, well, when you're ready to talk your trauma, just let me know. I'll be here.
Well, Pearly does say that he used to work at the docks and worked for the city. And then he asks Negan where he used to work. And he goes, I worked for the state, too. I was a gym teacher with a big old grin on his face.
Right. So they decide to attempt to escape together. And even though Negan has asked repeatedly, like, why do we have to keep doing this? Pearly is not giving up on taking him back in for justice. So they get to a place where there's a bus that they can get on and hide for.
Not yet. The bus is late.
Did I skip something?
You skipped over. Yeah. Cause zombies appear because it's the Walking Dead universe and crowds of zombies just show up out of nowhere. And so they hide in a building, kind of a school, looks a lot like a school. And they find in one room somebody's crazy art project, which is a bunch of doll arms and legs and heads. And it calls to mind that image that we have seen, that little clip in the previews that shows the zombie with the multiple limbs.
Right.
And
I got real excited when I saw all those doll arms. Cause like, oh no, we're going to see it. It's going to happen.
And then they find the artist who I have to say, I want to see the schematic for the death machine they built.
The creativity that they displayed as a props department was second to none.
It was very impressive because whatever this thing involved pulling a rope and an axe embedding itself in this guy's head. And I want to see the pulley arrangement
I want to see the web series about this artist, you know, because you know that it's crazy.
Oh yeah. Somewhere in the show Bible, there's like a little paragraph where it's like, this was Phil, and this is Phil's backstory. And right. he taught eighth grade art history. And after the zombie apocalypse, and it just goes on for a while. And
Phil watched all of his friends and neighbors be eaten, he decided doll art wasn't that important anymore.
it wasn't as fulfilling, and so he got an axe. But anyway, it's a great looking effect. I mean, it's a fantastic dead person prop. I mean, it's the camera lingers on it. They are clearly very proud of their axe.
Oh yeah, it was super well lit and everything.
Yeah, I mean, just big old axe right through somebody's head, and lodged in there.
The thing is,
The thing is that that image painted a whole picture of how that shit happened.
Mm-hmm.
The way it knocked his head back and God damn.
Oh yeah. It's a great looking shot.
But as an artist, I would say I would fabricate a gigantic ice cream scoop to kind of dollop my head off my neck. That's how I would do it.
I imagine that this guy built that thing maybe in year three and just like had it for maybe another couple of years.
Right before he goes to bed, he goes, not today.
Yeah, I made it through another day. Didn't kill myself. But anyway, we're getting caught up on details and minutia. Negan hears a walker in the building floating around. And so as he and Pokey are starting to like leave, you know, Pokey's like, I'm going to take you to justice. And Negan's like, fine, I guess that's what we're doing. He grabs the walker and pushes it right into Pokey. And uses that as an opportunity to almost escape, but Pokey like follows him, and when he gets down to the bottom level of this place that they're in, Negan tries to like get through the door, but the door won't open, and Pokey shoots that weird grappling hook gun at him, but it doesn't hit him; it hits the door, and then Pokey uses the grappling hook to open the door. Like to rip the door off the hinges, which, let's be real, Pokey did not have the strength to do.
I'm really, really excited for the Adam Savage web series about making one of those.
Yeah.
Because the physics involved are just too, it's no. Anyways, I don't want to get into that.
Right. It looks cool, though.
It is very fucking cool. Oh, yeah. There was a shot that where I could tell they were using a latex rubber prop for the little grappling gun, because the end was waggling back and forth. It was I don't know. It just struck me funny that I caught something like that, you know.
Yeah, so Negan basically decides, we're going to get out of here together. I will help you escape, and I'll probably be using this time to try and convince you to not turn me in when we finally do escape.
And he gives a little bit of a speech here, because for some reason, I mean, at this point, the marshal is on the stairs just looking defeated. And Negan's like, fine, I'll save you. But you don't know me. You keep thinking that you know who I am, but you don't know who I am. And this is a line that we've seen in the trailers before, where it's supposed to imply that, you know, the...
And he says it so often to so many different people.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, that is Negan's catchphrase this season. You don't know me.
Right?
You know me?
The trailer, like, making it seem like we're supposed to question whether or not this reformed or semi-reformed Negan that we've been seeing in the last seasons of the main show is who he is, right? It's supposed to tease us that he's going back to being Negan, the warlord character. And yet everything in this series has been like, no, he's not. We're not backtracking on character development for both characters. We're just going to reserve that for Maggie.
Right. Yes, because heaven forbid that Maggie make any kind of logical or realistic decisions.
Yes, we'll get to that too. So then they end up making their way through the city again, but our marshal is a wounded and very lame, and so they end up in this bus.
And that's when Pokey decides to tell Negan all about his brother, which is basically Samuel L. Jackson's part in Do the Right Thing.
Mm.
He's the favorite son and the best older brother, but he gets caught up in drugs and ends up trying to rob his parents, and they cut him off, and then the world ended, and nobody even thought for a second about trying to find him until it was too late to go back into the city. And that is, of course, we know the brother that died, that killed himself in the apartment. And apparently this letter that Pokey brought with him, he's had since before the fall of the zombie times.
And in typical entertainment only fashion, he has not read this letter until he got to the island. How right. many years have gone by since the fall of civilization?
14 to 16 years.
And Tim. all of that time, he did not read this note until it became dramatically appropriate for him to read.
Of course.
Okay, sure. I'll buy that. No, I don't buy that.
Sometimes you just don't want to see it. And that can last a long time.
Nodding. Listeners, we're all nodding sagely at that.
Mm-hmm. So I've had a message sitting in my Google inbox for like, I don't know, 18 months or something that I don't want to open. I don't want to see what it says.
You're going to hold off another 13 years?
I will probably never open that message. But I'm going to stare at it because
you're going to leave it in your inbox so that you can torture yourself with it a little.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to remind myself, that's not being a very good person, Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, as long as you have a plan.
So, this story is stupid, and I just hate that they are pushing Pokey so hard, because it's just like, I just don't care. I don't need any of this. I don't need any of it. But I will say, this is absolutely the worst part of the episode. Everything else I felt was pretty fun, to be honest.
Yeah, this monologue, it was written difficult. It was a difficult monologue because of the way it was written, is what I'm trying to say, I think, because it started out so clunky. And then then I started to believe it later on. But at first I was like, oh, this is just awkward.
I don't like the actor that they have playing Pokey's delivery. Because I feel it's very, very like stage actory.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Every time he has had like a big speech to deliver, it was several years ago and I was a wee child or
my let brother me tell was you, an nincompoop.
Let me tell you about myself. My name's Pokey Joe, and I have a wife and three beautiful sons. Like, no, ain't nobody care, Pokey. Stop trying to make fetch happen.
I love it when I get a reference. It makes me happy.
So that's basically where we end with Pokey and Negan, unfortunately. Because we have to go into the sewers with Maggie and the NPCs.
Yep.
Where all the fun things get to happen.
Yep. They're getting started on their little journey there. They got to get a little pep talk from Baldy. Is that what we call him?
Yeah, Big Baldy.
Big Baldy. Well, Big Baldy, he's like, here's your survival tips. Now let's fuck off and try not to get sick from methane.
Which Maggie immediately begins. Yeah. Like, it does not take 5 minutes for Maggie to be like, oh no, my constitution.
Well, I'm trying to figure out if the methane is so bad that it's bubbling up, then how the hell are they breathing at all? Because methane is not actually something that the human lungs are meant to have going inside them.
Well, those tubes, they're ventilated too. They're open to open air. So it's going to be less concentrated in there, but there will be like a collection system for it.
Right.
Namsan.
And you know, you can go to certain places and it's not going to be so concentrated because of the vents and all the stuff that are made that make up the sewer.
But here's the deal. Ooh, stinky.
Yeah.
Ooh, stinky. And
the fun thing about the sewer is that it is full completely with just rotting corpses, just piled up. There is not a scene in this particular section of the show that does not have just a giant pile of rotting corpses in it. And I thought that was super fun.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. This episode had its shit together when it comes to the gross stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So they start into the sewer, and the first thing that happens is that Big Baldy says something about his backpack, like, oh, let me get in here and get these Snickers bars that I've got in my backpack, because Snickers satisfies. And Maggie's like... And Maggie's like, let me help. I can look for Snickers. And he's like, no, don't touch my backpack. And it was like, oh, an obvious spy is even more obvious.
Yes, this was not subtle at all.
Right.
Yeah, and he had like a small blinking light on him. It was that just illuminated spy over and over again.
And that's not even including the actual blinking light that he had on his forehead. For some reason, they give this dude a red forehead light.
Now there is a reason for a red light. It is tactically, it's difficult from a distance to see the source of a red light. And that's why you see those old Vietnam flashlights that look like a little T. One side's red, one side's white. Or clear light, and so yeah, they would use those red lights walking at night so they could not be shot by snipers.
Oh, interesting.
So he had a little thing that, but it just turns everything red down there.
Right.
Ew.
Yeah. So they get to this room with some big old goopy like collection, like something, some big old goopy things, and he's like, let me just put my backpack down for a minute. Oh, look what I have discovered. It's oxygen tanks. I found these oxygen tanks and we can use them to get out of the sewer. And they decide that Jenny gets one of her own, but that everybody else has to share the other two.
Now, what Dustin is not getting across here is just how much this entire scene would have actually benefited from him simply going, oh goodness me, look what I have found, because just delivered just like that, because it is so obvious in this moment that
he goes, lucky, huh?
I mean, we're talking, there's actually a neon sign that has lit up above him and it has an arrow pointing down.
Yeah.
And it says spy. I mean, we had no idea there was still neon going on in the sewers, but there is, and we found the sign. So, yeah, it's so bleeding obvious that this is not at all what he says it is.
Right. And the look that Maggie gives him is very much like, I see what's happening here. I have figured it out. I've Columbo'd my way into solving this mystery. So they head further into the sewers, and of course Maggie keeps like becoming less and less cognizant because she is immediately affected by the methane and very strongly affected in a way that almost no one else we get to see this happening to anybody else.
Right.
So there's like four different rooms that are full of corpses. Room number one, we got the explanation from Big Baldy of like, hey, this is how methane works, and this is how we're going to have to get out of here so that we can survive. And then room number two also has the big vats in it. And that's when he's like, aren't we so lucky that we found this oxygen? So then they go into room number three. And that's when Big Baldy, like, tries to kind of have some weird heart-to-heart with Maggie about, like...
Yeah, he's fucking busted.
Yeah.
So he's trying to make her... He's trying to make her, you know, more on his side about it.
Right.
But she's having none of this.
Right. So they all stop to rest in this room full of corpses. And what are you going to sit on in a room full of corpses? This, you know, with no chairs? The corpses.
Yeah, just sit on the corpses.
Yes.
This has so never everybody... been a problem for any other character in any episode of any of the Walking Dead shows, just sitting down next to, on top of, beneath,
or near a one
you
of
aim
the,
for the do you aim for the guts or would you want to go for something more solid like the shoulder area?
Right. Well, but remember, you know, so they're sitting there and he's trying to explain what's going on. And then Maggie just gets tired of it. And she's like, I know your secret. You're a spy. You are the one who led us all to destruction. And he's like, no, I didn't do it.
What makes you get, why would you say something that's so crazy?
And she's like, because you knew exactly where those oxygen tanks were, because those oxygen tanks were in your backpack.
Bum, bum, bum.
And Curly Hair is like, oh my god, really? And Big Baldy like tries to be like, I didn't know he was gonna kill everybody. I just thought that, you know, he was gonna like let us go and, you know, whatever. And she's like, I hate you so much now. And they run away. So room number three, successful sit on corpses. It's room number four when they go to the next place to sit down where things really go bad, because Big Baldy like corners Maggie and he's like, this is all your fault.
Oh yeah, you
you should have we should have never listened to you or whatever. And she's like, I'm not the one who got all my friends killed. And he's like, he told me that if I delivered, he would let us go. And he even told us of the place we were going to be able to go. And it's, and he describes her new place, the new hilltop. And she's like, oh shit. This is going to come to bite me in the buttocks later.
Uh-huh.
Oh yeah.
And about the time we're starting to wonder why exactly Maggie looks so nervous about this guy being told he could go to the Bricks, which is what her new community is called, by the Croat, about the time we're starting to be like, wait a minute, that's a little strange. All the zombie corpses that they're all sitting on come back to life. And Curly Hair is immediately sucked into the corpses and fangoriously devoured. Like, there's half that bitch left in like seconds.
Oh my God, yeah.
And
the editor of Fangoria magazine has to absolutely be coming about all of this.
And in trying to save her, Big Baldy gets bitten on the neck in a way, as we know, is very fatal with walker bites. And he tries one more time before he dies to be like, I'm so sorry. I didn't know any of this would happen. This is so strange that when I made a deal with a sociopath murderer that we'd all be sociopathically murdered.
Had no idea that shit would happen.
Right.
Yeah, it's the whole leopard eating party thing again.
Yeah. And so it just leaves Jenny and Maggie to try and make it out of this place alive. And they enter, I guess, the fifth room full of corpses. And Maggie is like all mad at Jenny. She's like, you should have stayed at the Bricks. None of this would have ever done happened if you had not just stayed where we told you to stay. And she's like, look, I don't know what you think you saw in my backpack, but I didn't tell Negan that you were here because I didn't know you were here. Not for certain, for sure-sies. And Jenny's just looking at her like as she digs herself into deeper and deeper of a hole. And then something weird happens.
What
would happened? Anyone else like to describe the craziness we encounter?
Well, before we get to the craziness, which is, if it's what you're thinking of, if it is what I think you're thinking of, Maggie also drops a fairly big and obvious lie here, where she says, "I'm doing this to save my son and to save my friends because the Croat's going to come and take all the grain like he did before." And we get a little flashback.
We know we get that flashback later.
Oh, okay. Well,
we don't get that until after the Curtis.
What?
Curtis, why don't you describe what we're about to experience?
I'm trying to think of which part you're talking about.
The big goopy corpse monster.
Okay.
So
before we get to the big goopy corpse monster.
Okay.
Maggie sends Jenny on ahead. Because,
she sends Jenny on ahead because
can I do it? Can I do it or not?
Yeah. Curtis, you do it.
Okay. Here's what happens. Maggie and the young woman. What are we calling her?
Jenny.
Danny?
Jenny is her name.
Jenny. Okay, Jenny is her name. Okay. So Maggie and Jenny come into this kind of, there's a place, it's like a crossroads, but it's made of pipes, right?
Yeah.
So, a conjunction. So they're like, okay, we got to go over that way. And then they start heading over there. Maggie gets her foot caved in through a corpse and it gets stuck. And she can't get it out. And then she's making a bunch of noise. And that wakes up what looks to be like one of the zombies. And so one of the zombies starts crawling toward her. And then as it gets close, we discover it's a whole bunch of just mashed up. It's like a centipede of human zombies.
They have been slying their, oozing their juices together for so long that they have become one creature.
Yeah, their proteins are coexisting in perfect harmony.
And it's the one we've seen in all of the previews, the big, goopy, gross one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that you guys know what I'm talking about because it was fucking gross. Anyway, it attacks Maggie, and Maggie's like, holy shit, there's so many heads.
And I love the part when it got to her and all of a sudden all the other faces started coming out of its torso.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that was really good.
Oh, man. It was such a great, it was a brilliant effect. They should get an Emmy Award for that one shot. That was fucking awesome. That was something else. But anyway, you know, Maggie stabs them all in the head and she conveniently is able to pull her leg out. Easily after the multi-zombie is dead.
Right. I love when that happens, when it's like, oh no, I'm trapped here because of plot contrivance. Oh, I don't need to be trapped here anymore. Excellent. I'll just go.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks really, really cool, but it dies just as...
Just it dies like a bitch. She kills every single one of those heads on her own.
Mm-hmm. Then... She after she gets out, she climbs up the ladder to try to follow Jenny, and she sees she wrote on the wall in gore, liar, because she knows that she was lying about the grain.
Yes, which was what we discover in Jenny's flashback, which is while she was at the bricks, she decided to go and check out Maggie's story. Of being robbed in a very A Bug's Life sort of way, and discovers that that is actually not what happened. Meanwhile, Maggie is having a methane-induced hallucination of what actually happened when Herschel was kidnapped. And what it happens to have been is the Croat showed up and gave her Negan's wanted poster. So he went there not to steal from her, but to get her to bring Negan to him. And we discover this at the exact same time that we discover that Jenny discovered that all the grain that she said was stolen was not stolen at all.
Yeah.
And so Maggie's, this explains for me a little bit why Maggie has been so adversarial to Negan in a way that we felt like was no longer correct for her character. But at the same time, is very much just stupid, because I feel like if Maggie had gone to Negan, we could literally have the exact same plot of this entire 6-episode series. If the first time Negan and Maggie got back together, she said to him, "I ran into your old friend, the Croat, and he kidnapped my son. And he said the only way I'm going to get him back is if I bring you to him. So what is our plan to go and do that?" She didn't need to make up this big stupid story about how she was a simple village woman and was being menaced by a man from the big city. She could have laid all of this out, and this exact story could have still happened, except we wouldn't get this weird reveal.
Yeah, and they're not revealing very much. Because, yeah, no. Probably, yeah. That's just par for the course, really.
Right. And it's, it does help, like, I like that it sort of explained why the Croat was so excited to see him. Because he was like, "Hey! Hey, buddy!" I love that part. I still, like, Croat's my favorite. All right, so now we get to talk a little bit about what he was up to. The Croat's not in a good mood, you guys. And so he goes to this theater. On the way, he runs over a walker in his car, which I thought was really funny. He gets to this theater, and some of his goons are, like, hanging out in there, being goons.
Oh, man, they were so goony.
Yeah. What was one playing? It's the End of the World as We Know It?
No, it's Anything Goes.
Oh, Anything Goes. On the piano, which was just hammering so dumb. It. Yeah. And so the Croat goes backstage, and he goes to, like, this door, and this big, big black lady comes out of the door and looks at him like he is dirt on the ground. And is just like, "Ugh, what are you doing here?" And he's like, "I'm here to see the special lady."
And what does she say? "What are you looking at, bitch?" Or something?
Yeah, something out of my like way, that. Bitch. Yeah. And she shoulder checks him hard, and I loved it. I was like, "No, I'm into it. I want this kid. I want this lady to be part of the show now." You know.
But oh, we'll be seeing her again.
Not.
So the Croat goes into the room, and there is a very fancy lady in there.
A dame of the New York stage.
Right, or something like that. She's some sort of fancy lady.
Just, and it's exactly what I imagined the New York theater scene to be like. There's some crusty old lady who lives in a dressing room.
Yeah, who's never left that. Who's been in the same run, Broadway run, for 12 years and has never left the theater. Like, moved into her dressing room the first week and just has not left. Bernadette Peters doesn't actually own a home. She just lives in her dressing rooms. And so they discuss how difficult it has been to get Negan and how he is the key and all that stuff. And the lady does a really weird analogy where she's like, "So you thought this was the second act, but you don't have a finale." And the Croat's like, "Sure, lady."
Oh my God.
But it is understood that Negan, and he brings Pokey's badge with him. When he goes, and he's like, "Look, here's New Babylon. They're coming. They are coming." And we, and so this kind of explains what's going on. They not only, they want Negan because they think that he can become the leader that New York needs, which I felt was really an interesting reveal, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and how very unusual, you know, how not obvious.
Right. I mean, I've been constantly impressed by the way that they have written the Croat as a character.
Yeah.
Because they start off with like, oh, he wants to kill Negan. He's going to want to kill him. Oh, wait, no, he doesn't. He loves Negan. He's super excited to see him. And then this whole new reveal of like, we need somebody. I don't want Negan because, you know, it's a notice me senpai sort of thing. It's a, I need Negan because he's going to be able to save this city.
Right. Which is just like, did you say a notice me senpai sort of thing?
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
I loved it.
Well, because they're anticipating that New Babylon is going to come and try and take control of New York for some reason. We haven't been given a good, like, explanation of New Babylon really at all, aside from we know it's a place, we know that the Marshall's from there, and that they have a very specific and pretty harsh series of laws.
Justice systems, yeah. Like, so, it's very Judge Dredd, because yeah, these guys can go, you know.
But we don't have a lot of information about what it is. I mean, we just know it's a place, right? But it,
right.
In typical Walking Dead fashion, it's an expansionist group, I guess, because they all seem to be. So the Croat and the Dama is the name of this character, this woman, they're thinking that New Babylon is going to come for them and that somehow Negan is the key to organizing New York into a single culture, I guess.
Or, a single entity so that they can stand up to the new world powers that are on their way. And so now we've got New Babylon and we've got the Commonwealth. And we've got, what was it, KBR or whatever, that was in Fear the Walking Dead for a little while?
Yeah, and there's the CMR?
CRM or something like that. Whatever, whoever has Rick, people that have Rick. So this is our you know, so I love that they've got, like, all these weird, like, mega communities. That are, you know,
it is. It's very Judge Dredd, you know, or very Dredd, I guess, where they had those huge apartment buildings, or it's all communal, and
right.
They built a good world, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just very interesting. I'm very interested to see what is gonna come up next for our friends.
Oh yeah, before we talk a little bit more about that, let's touch briefly on the redefinition of the power structure in this place, because everybody looks at the Croat as the big bad. All the people, you know, our bald guy and the curly haired girl and all the other NPCs, they all view the Croat as like the big bad.
Right.
But he is so deferential to the Dama. It's such a weird relationship that we see just a little bit of. I mean, the scene ends with her like holding out her hand, and he bows down and basically puts his face into her hand, and she's stroking the top of his head. I mean, what is this relationship?
I think it's his mom.
She's not old enough to be his mom.
Oh, that woman was a wrinkly old bag of bones.
Well, but he is not a young man, and
right.
She is not that much older than he is.
Well, yeah, she looks about 70, 72. He looks like between 38 and 42.
Oh, good Lord, no.
That actor's like 65.
Yeah, he's like 65 years old. And
well, his mom would have to be not 80 or 90.
Lisa Emery is... I don't see
sister?
How old she is.
Maybe sister?
But she started acting in 1985, so she's, you know, not, yeah, they're
yeah, back when she was hot, yeah. Oh, I think she's a related to him somehow.
Maybe, but I mean, there's very much this very interesting relationship here that just completely changes the power structure that the show has set up to this point.
Right. I'm very interested to see what's going to happen next now.
Well, I mean,
we're
obviously not going to resolve this in one episode.
Right. I want to talk about something else that I thought was really stupid.
Sure.
Maggie's fucking coat.
What?
Because when they go into the sewer, which we have established many, many times, is full of zombies, Maggie is wearing a very sturdy leather coat. But it does not take her long at all to strip that shit off and put, you know, down to her tank top. And she fights all of these walkers, including the giant, messy, gross, cool one, in her little tank top. And I find that so freaking irritating. I just hate it so bad. Like, there is no way a woman like Maggie, who has lived all of this time in The Walking Dead, would be like, I guess I know I'm going with all these walkers here. I'm going to just, like, take my really sturdy coat off.
She was affected by the methane.
Yeah. Well, okay, but it's like it's the same reason that we don't see characters wearing helmets all the time to covering up their face. It's because you paid for the actor, and so you want to see the actor's face. And
in this case, her décolletage and beautiful arms.
Right. I mean, this is very much we're showing off the character's assets. This is very much it's kind of a male gaze thing. Or I'm certain she has
plenty. Well, I mean, she's not being like Jennifer Aniston pinching her nipples up before every scene.
Right. No, I agree with you. I just think that it's stupid. From a storytelling and costuming standpoint,
I agree. There's zero impracticality to it, but I still maintain.
If I were on this show, if I were part of the crew of this show, if I was in the costume department, it would by the time we got to Fear the Walking Dead, it would be like, all right, nobody is wearing anything but long sleeves anymore. Everybody's wearing long sleeves. Everybody is wearing leather. We're not going to do this whole thing where it's like, you know, just because, you know, we can, that way it makes more realistic sense, but whatever.
Well,
whatever.
Yeah, I mean, shit, you got to have some kind of armor in the zombie land and everybody knows this.
Well, right. But you can't have dramatic threat. If you put your heroes in sensible clothing, you have to, you know, this way you can have people get bit in like the small of their back for like reasons.
I would be worried about like slipping, falling and getting a bone shard and then end up being a zombie.
Right.
Oh, sure.
There's this really funny TikTok that's done by a British comedian. Where he plays like a very upper crust. All of his TikToks, I can look them up, but I'm not going to and I don't want to. All of his TikToks are very much like, I'm a very upper crust British person, and he makes fun of that. And one of his series is in the zombie apocalypse. And so it will be, you know, his character will come up and be like, oh, what did you find when you were out raiding or when you were out scavenging? Oh, I'm afraid I can't let you bring that in. We only drink oat milk here. You know, I can't let you bring in that, you know, sweetened condensed milk that has so many calories. It's so cute. And one of the things that he does is he goes, oh, well, it is very strange that I've survived this long, but I learned very early that the human jaw is very weak. Yes, I understand you're a horde of monsters, but try to bite through denim. You
know? Oh, man. You guys listening, that was worth the price of admission right there.
Right?
Yeah. I could look him up, but I don't want to. I mean, I could, but I'm not going to.
Well, if they're cool, it'll be in their logarithm. They can just enjoy.
But
and I'm just assuming that at least one of our listeners is cool.
Yeah.
Sure.
That would be nice. You know what would be really cool of our cool listener to do?
What?
Leave a comment.
Oh, they're too cool.
Or a thing. Like a like and a subscribe. Like and subscribe, you guys, to our dumb show. There's so many episodes. There are hundreds and hundreds of episodes for you to listen to.
Yeah. You go on a long drive, it's not as long when you've got some friends.
And we want to be your friends.
Where were we?
Hey, folks, we're lonely, and we'd like to come visit.
We're outroing, Curtis.
Did we tell the whole story?
Oh, we
did. Feel like
we have one more thing, and that is the final shot of the episode, which is Jenny fires a flare gun off into the night.
That's right.
And this is everyone looks up to see the flare.
And right.
This will draw the attention of peoples, I am sure.
And walkers. It's just a bad plan. I just hate it. That's not something I loved. But, I mean, if Negan runs up there and he's like, I knew it was you, Jenny, because I knew that was your flare, I'll hate it even more. But we can wait and hate it next week.
Right. Like Dustin said, you can give us a rating. You can give us a comment. You can find us on all the various podcast platforms, and you can leave your ratings and comments there. If you go over to iTunes or Apple Music, whatever they're calling it now, Apple Podcasts, you can leave us a rating and a comment there. That is a important place for the algorithm that helps other people find the show. So it'd be really cool if you could do that. We have a Patreon over on at patreon.com, Zompocalypse Now. You can look us up and you can support the show there if you like. But giving us reviews, sharing the show, these are all good things that help the show as well. And check out the Outbreak Challenge. We haven't done a race in a while, but we had a good time doing it. So we should do that again here sometime in the not too distant future. And we'll do this again next week. Dustin, thank you.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Curtis.
Thank you, Tim.
And again, folks, we really do appreciate you listening. I've been looking at the numbers of our downloads, and they're really nice. We appreciate you listening to our little show. We have fun doing it. We hope you have fun listening to it. And we'll see you guys on our next episode of Zompocalypse Now. Zompocalypse Now is produced and recorded by Timothy Harvey, Dustin Adair, and Curtis Smith for Just Some Guy Productions. All rights reserved.